Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxy.
Out, check it out, check it out. We are definitely live on YouTube, and you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Check it out. Hit the like and subscribe below, and we will be coming to you every week, mostly every week. I mean, there are some times where we miss, but most of the time we are here live and in 3D with my good friends and partners in crime. Here we go. Let's introduce to you the two boxing aficionados here on my right. We have Mr. Harold Hunt, professional boxing judge. What's up? What's up? What's up?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I am so good. And I'm even better now that I get a chance to see you.
Thank you.
And closest to me here in the middle, we're going to switch up the screens in just a second, but we have Mr. Paul S. Haberman, Esquire. What's up? What's up? What's up, Paul?
How are you, Mark?
I'm good, brother.
Harold?
Hey.
I'm good. It's a pleasure to see you both. And, you know, to be honest, we have had a very, very busy weekend. This weekend, we were at Madison Square Garden in New York, New York. And yes, 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 we took part in Eddie Hearn's Matchroom Boxing, DAZN, incredible card. And Harold, man, I wanted you to be with us so badly, and you weren't. So tonight we are going to, for your benefit and for those of you tuning in, we are going to chop up what went down. Now, I had the distinct pleasure of being with Paul Haberman there. Paul was there. He was with some of his clients that fought at the Garden, and we got a chance to catch up early on in the evening. And man, it was quite an evening. And I know that you got a chance to watch it all, Harold, from your control room. And I know that you saw the other amazing fight, which took place at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, put on by none other than Bob Arum and Top Rank Promotions. Man, there was so much boxing going on. So let's get right into it. Harold, what you got?
Hey, man, I was doing a fight myself, judging a fight in another state. So, of course, I was concentrating on that. But soon as the hand was raised for the last fight, you talking about somebody running to the car, getting to the hotel, firing up the laptop, and catching everything I could. So I indeed had to work, which was enjoyable, but I still got a chance to pick up the Serrano fight and the Shakur Stevenson fight. So therefore, I do have some commentary, some insight, some understanding of what I saw. So the first one you want me to go to is which?
Well, let's go. If it's okay with you, Harold, what I'd like to do is I'd like to start out with, you know, what took place in Madison Square Garden in New York. And list out, and just, you know, for the listeners that maybe didn't get a chance to tune in, or they did and didn't really see all the undercard stuff. We had Sky Nicholson versus Sean Kwok-Pak Paisley Davis as the first bout, followed by Kaliko and William Langston. Next up was Rashad Matai. I guess that's how you say his name, Matai, against Joe Ellie Hernandez. The next fight after that was Galil Yafai against Miguel Cartagena. Then there was Austin Williams versus Cordell Booker. Franchon Cruz Dizern versus Elaine Cedros. And then there was a Jesse Vargas versus Liam Smith. And finally, there was Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano. So it was a really well put together fight. And I think some of the things that I personally loved about it was that the arena was sold out.
Not just sold out, Mark. That was, I mean, I've seen it on TV with every British fighter that's ever made it to HBO, Showtime, or DAZN, but to actually be there in person with the way they chant and carry on, the Irish and British fans, was absolutely incredible sitting there by the time it got to the top of the card. They are wild. They are a special breed. I was joking on my social media that when I retire, I want to be a full-time British sports fan after sitting there.
Yeah. It was, I tell you, I had a hard time sitting the whole time because my back isn't good. And so, like, sitting down like that much is not a good thing for me. But yeah. I'll tell you, man, the it was captivating. I actually had these earbuds that I have to put in my ears, right? Because that sound, the noise, it's just not, it's not workable for me. It was so thunderous. I literally had these earplugs that I had to put in because I can't take that kind of noise. I'm telling you, could have heard that in New Jersey. It was so loud.
Yeah, I watched it on air. I mean, on you know, over the web, and the crowd was so crazy. I was getting excited in my heart just watching the highlights. Remind me of Floyd and when he came over to fight Floyd and lost.
Ricky Hatton.
So also yes. Also when the referee didn't hear the bell to stop one of those rounds. The bell rung four times. He was still standing because he could not hear it. And whenever you can't hear the bell, and the man who's hitting the bell is directly below you in the corner where the fight is, I knew it was extremely loud. So it translated, the excitement translated over the web on highlights, the fervor that was there.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see it yet. I didn't get a chance to see it back. But I really would like to see it on television just to see the angles and stuff, right? Yeah. Paul?
Yeah, but I watched the DAZN top five clips or something of the evening that I watched. That's all I've seen so far. But it was just wild, really, really and truly. I've been to some good boxing cards. That was just lively a one, just not just the fights, but the event. Of any that I've been to.
Yeah. I mean, did you guys have any particular fights that stood out to you from the card?
Well, for me, just quickly, was Vargas was knocked out for the first time. And Leon Smith did an excellent job with his application of the sport. I mean, he really beat that guy up. So that was a great fight. I know Franchon. She was here in Atlanta because she actually makes boxing attire for certain fighters. She has a skill set, and she was here in Atlanta and she met someone. I mean, she brought some attire for a fighter I was doing here in Atlanta, and we end up in the hotel room, we end up in a hotel restaurant. And we were talking, and she would tell me her husband was a fighter and this, and we talked for a long time. I said, I know you. And she told me who she was. And we talked, but I've seen her fight several times. I'm a fan of hers, and we had a good conversation. But I was glad that she won you know, and that was good for her also.
Yeah.
It was no a dominant doubt. Winner by then, too.
So if we get back to the Jesse Vargas versus Liam Smith fight, you know, that was, it was a TKO in the 10th round. It was scheduled for 12. It only went 10. And, yeah, I mean, the performance, it was for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Super Welterweight title. And, yeah, it was, you know, Jesse Vargas just was on his back foot the whole night. He really couldn't deal with the high guard pressure that was being delivered by Liam Smith. I mean, he had a real hard time dealing with that high guard. And I thought to myself, man, why don't you just go down to the body? But I think what was happening was every time he tried, he was getting countered so quickly that it just wasn't feasible for him to let his hands go the way he had anticipated he would let his hands go. And I thought, you know,
it was like it was no game plan. There was no set plan. There was no A, there was no B, there was no C. There was just, I don't know. I didn't, either the game plan just got totally scrubbed because of the skill set of Leon, and they didn't even have a B, or right. He didn't execute it, or he wasn't in shape, or he was intimidated. So many different things, but he just looked totally out of himself, and he paid for that.
Yeah.
Somebody pointed out to me correctly, because I hadn't really thought about him in a while either way, that Vargas was above his best weight class. But even with that, I mean, it was such a savage, comprehensive beatdown by Smith. Over the course of the fight, who I might add, I was sitting next to his friends and family, and they were going absolutely bonkers. It was a pleasure to behold.
but
it was savage. After a while, you're like, "What is keeping this man up?" So,
it really was a sad. It ended up being a savage beatdown. And you know, one of the things that I really noticed about it was, you know, Jesse Vargas's punches were not straight. They were not clean. There was not really that much snap in it, and he just couldn't keep Liam Smith off of him. And when it came time to throw, it seemed like it just took so long for him to get his shots where they needed to be. And when he did land the shots, they had no effect. It was almost as if, you know, I mean, I really was disappointed by the matchup from the standpoint of it being, because I thought it would be a much more competitive fight than what it actually was. But, you know, I heard the murmurings, oh, that's not a competitive fight. It's not, you know. So, you know, Jesse Vargas.
I mean, there were some good exchanges, but not enough of them for Vargas. It's not that he wasn't alive at times, but it was just so comprehensive and poised and consistent by Smith. You know, something to behold, you know, how hard he kept going at him, you know, without being discouraged, that he didn't seem to be budging for the first several rounds.
Yeah, well, Smith's right hand was devastating. I mean, that right hand was just so on point. It was just a lot to handle. And then, you know, I think it's worth discussing the Franchon Cruz de Zern versus Ellen Cedros fight, because, again, that was a great fight. It really, really was a great fight. And it was it was a unification fight.
Yeah, she's undisputed super middleweight champion now.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, WBC, WBA, IBF and WBO. And so, you know, she came out of the ring, you know, she completed the 10 rounds. There were moments that were pretty tough for her too. It wasn't like just a cakewalk fight. There were moments where she had to really dig deep and really work hard to make things happen. And I think one of the things that had her being really successful is just the amount of output, her sheer output. She just was relentless. She kept going, knowing that, You know, if I don't keep punching, if I don't keep throwing that overhand, you know, I may not win this. I may not win this fight. And you know, I was really pleasantly surprised to see her win. You know, I mean, and remember, her record is 7-1. She's got 7-1. And, you know, Ellen Cedros was, 8-0. And it's pretty amazing that she's, you know, unified champion now.
Well, yes. Remember, her pro debut was the same pro debut as Clarissa Shields. So that's a hell of a first fight for to have as a professional. And they knew each other from the amateurs. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, she was just a juggernaut. You know, Cedros never really got rolling other than a couple of moments here and there where there's, you know, either maybe a brief timeout or the hands were down. But there was no anxiety for me watching that fight as a fan of Franchon, where I was like, you know, she's blowing this. It just wasn't there at any point more than a few seconds.
Yes, and Clarissa was there to you know, root her on, obviously. So that was good to see, you know, her only rival.
Right.
Game recognizes game.
Well, a couple of the other highlights of the evening, I mean, we could talk about this card for an hour. I mean, we really could. There was just so many bright spots in the card, and there were so many dark spots in the card, too. One of the dark spots was the matchup with Galil Yafal against Miguel Cartagena.
I actually thought that was – I mean, Yafal looks nasty. I mean, he's a gold medalist. You know, Cartagena had a solid record, but he just had nothing for him. Yafal feels like one of those guys that can be fast-tracked without much delay. I mean, he just utterly steamrolled him. Clearly, he's got game. You know, he's youthful. He's got the gold medal. He's got the confidence. I mean,
you know, whenever you see Harold, tell me about this. Like, look, tell me what you think. When you see a guy who has a record that of 1-0, right? Former gold medalist, you know, really, really solid amateur pedigree. He's 1-0, one knockout. And he steps up to fight a guy that's 17-6 with one draw. I mean, what is your initial reaction when you see something like that?
Whatever his amateur background was may have prepared him and put him in a position to fight someone of that caliber. The 17-0 guy could have had some walkovers forever. And then finally got, you know, someone up that, you know, that's you know, pretty good. So I can't even say negatively on either side because, you know, you got fighters who fight amateurs so long, they come over here and the commissions think that, or they feel that, or they understand that type of work qualifies them to fight people of, you know, who are pros and have a certain win ratio. So nowadays, I think Lomachenko shattered that thought process. And as we go forward, a lot of fights on the ledger doesn't really mean anything if you fought certain type of competition as an amateur.
Right. It's just, I mean, even the whole time I've been watching, there's only been a handful of people that have successfully done that. But so I think to your point, Lomachenko really broke through and showing that could be done. I mean, you have, I'm just thinking Lucien Boutet was moved pretty aggressively his first 10-15 fights. You have obviously Guillermo Rigondo, who, you know, deservedly was regarded similarly to Lomachenko when he turned pro. They didn't waste too much time with him. And now you have, you know, Yafai. There's a couple others. Yeah, I feel like it's probably, to go over to the other card for a second, they're probably going to be moving Keyshawn Davis fairly aggressively, seeing what he's done so far, you know.
So anyway, I would be remiss not to say that particular fight between Miguel Cartagena and Galil Yafal was for at 111 pounds, 110 pounds. It was actually the WBC International flyweight title. That's what was on the line, and so he came out of the ring with a record of 1-0 with a, you know, WBC international flyweight title. So that's pretty impressive. Very, very interesting. What are your thoughts on that, Harold?
As I said, he has a skill set now. He can command a few more dollars. When he does some work, he'll be able to, the promoters will have a title list that they can, promote on their card. And he obviously can fight. And as long as the commission continues to put him in a situation where he can fight, and the sanctioning bodies feel that, he is, he can defend that belt on a regular basis, he should do okay.
Yeah. No, I agree. Totally agree. Well, let's see what happens with him on the way up. I mean, he's 1-0. There's lots of questions that need to be answered in the ring. And so, it's just the beginning for that young man. And so let's move on to the big kahunas. Everybody on this, watching this podcast right now and listening in from wherever you're listening in on, wants to talk about the Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano mega fight. That was, Monday fada, man. People were talking about that. All the chat rooms were lit up. Anybody in involved in, management or, marketing, everybody was talking about that evening and the success that was had by these two amazing young ladies, Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor. They went the distance. They went all 10 rounds. They put on a true spectacle for the fans that were in attendance and for those that were watching from wherever they were watching around the world. It also was for the WBC World Female Lightweight title. It was for the World Boxing Association World Female Lightweight title. The International Boxing Federation, which is the IBF, World Female title, and the WBO World Female title. All of those straps, all of them were on the line. Katie Taylor came to the table with all those belts. She was racking up her arms like this. She had all the belts on her arms. And well, go ahead.
The first thing I got to say is the sanctioning bodies racked up that night. Boy, everybody had a belt. Everybody got taxed for that belt. Everybody who fought had a belt, and they had to pay to defend that belt. And then you got all the medals. Those cost. You got to pay to get those. When you lose, you get that medal. Then you've got the fight. You got the trainers. They got their little belt they got to pay for. So, man, every sanctioning body was like, yeah, it's sold out. But we did very well because everybody paid us to hold on to those belts. So that's I got to start right there. I'm a financial type dude. And there you go. All right. As far as the fights are concerned, I enjoyed what I saw. Now, this is the time where two-minute rounds were beautiful. Two-minute rounds were great for the optics, for television, for the crowd. Didn't get a chance to catch a breath. They were in shape enough where they could throw for 2 minutes straight. So that was great, right? So the pace of the fight was just elevated because of that. I remember that with the Ali fights when she was fighting, just the pace because it was 2 minute rounds. So I appreciated that. If you want me to go into the fight a little bit, Katie was getting hit. And Katie was moving back and trying to survive, but she was trying to figure it out. But she was getting touched. And our girl Serrano was coming forward, and she was going for what she knew. She knew her style. She knew what she had to do, and she was doing it. But what impressed me about Katie Taylor was, yes, she had some shaky moments, but yet she was still landing the cleaner punch. I've got to give it to the judge; they did a great job. They were well schooled judges who knew what they were seeing. She was scoring off the back foot. She lost the first 3 or 4 rounds, but she was still scoring and she was still in the fight. And there was a time where the referee could have actually stopped it in a sense almost because she was kind of staggering around. But he didn't do that. He allowed her to continue because she was still picking her off. She was getting touched, but she still picked her off. Then she gathered herself. And when she gathered herself, she said, she's coming in. I'm just going to pick her off and pick her off. And then she started using her weight advantage. Initially, she didn't really understand it, I don't think. I didn't think she even used it. But the second part of the fight, I think she felt that, okay, I am heavier and I'm stronger. She can keep coming forward, but I can kind of blunt her aggression. And that's when she started catching it with those combinations and stepping to the left and the right. And it was just, you know, it was nice work. And then her physical and mental situation just elevated. And she stood in there and she started knocking Serrano off of her. She was coming forward, but she was knocking her off of her. Get off me, get off me, get off me. Take this punch, get off me, get off me. And she won that last round, the last two rounds, three rounds to me conventionally from a judge's standpoint. The best thing is no one's crying about it. It was a bad decision. No one's saying it was a robbery. None of that, because it was so clear that she did come back and win the fight. So I was, you know, I was impressed. They both got stitched up. The whole thing was just really nice. As you know, it's just boxing. Had the female part of it was thrown out. It was a great fight. People got stitched up. People came to the podium, bruised or what have you. The big bout, the big the bet between what's the YouTube guy and Eddie, $1 million, this and that. All of it was really great.
Yeah, that was really great, Harold. Thank you for that. That was amazing. Your recap of the fight was amazing. It was great to hear. I think, you know, what's interesting about watching boxing in the ring or at ringside or in the arena and watching the fight on television, I really love to get both of them because you see, you know, I think I was saying this to you the other day. I was saying this to somebody that I just think it's amazing that, you know, the people who invented boxing and who invented judging, right? They were so brilliant to put the judges, the three judges around the ring side. And what comes of that is that each judge sees the fight with a different vantage point, which means they're not watching the same fight. They're actually watching, and the things that determine what they see include the ring ropes. It includes the ring posts. It can be the referee. It can be the angle that the fighters are actually fighting in. And when you have all of those things working and you have the judges around the ring, this is why scores can oftentimes be out of kilter, because they're actually not watching the same fight. And I think Paul and I were talking. I don't know if it was you. Was it you, Paul, that we were talking about this?
With subjective scoring, that's probably more of a Harold discussion. Well, I'm more how to deal with it with the commission afterwards.
Well, hey, I know that the referee has to be able to get out of the way. I remember I was talking to Benny Estevez with you, Mark, and he was telling me how he gets out of the way so the judges can see all the action clearly. Some referees don't have that discipline. They get in one spot and they kind of stick there. So if you got a referee who's happy with that right side of the ring, he'll stay in there, he won't really move, then your view is going to be skewed. But if you have a referee who understands he needs to move constantly, even though the action is sustained, he still needs to move because the judges need to see. When you have that really helps the judges, of course. As you said, you got the ring posts and the ropes and all that. But to me, the biggest factor is the referee getting out of the way, still doing what he needs to do, but he needs to get out of the way. He needs to be invisible in a sense, constantly move. In this situation, I felt like he did move because the scores were very similar. They were very close to the end because everyone saw everything because he got out of the way. I know it's a simple thing. I work with a lot of referees who move and the ones who don't move. And this one, he moved. So, Mark, you're absolutely right. You know, when I'm sitting ringside in that high chair there, you know, I'm really watching and hoping I can see all angles. I'm pretty animated. I move around. I'll jump up. I'll turn my head sideways because I need to see everything. So this was a, you know, once again, it was well officialed by the referee, and the judges was just on point. I'm very happy about that. But Mark, to your point, you're absolutely right. That can really change the perspective, and that's when you get the wide scoring and the public furor and all of that.
Yeah, and I think just to kind of echo that and just stretch that out a little bit and expand upon it, I think what it is when a referee is trained, they're trained to use the diamond, to work the diamond in the ring, which means that they literally have points in the ring that they are, I'll draw it with my hand here on the screen, but it's kind of like there's points that they literally are taught to move to like that, right? So it helps the judges to be able to really see the action, as you mentioned. And yeah, it just, this is really for the benefit of those that are listening in and tuning in. They are also trained not to stand still, to continue to move for the purposes you just discussed. But what I guess what's interesting for me is I was actually in a skybox, so I wasn't down at ringside. So my view was from up above, looking down at the fight. And so the way I scored the fight, Harold, and the way, you know, I wasn't scoring, I was appreciating, enjoying the fight. But the way that I had the fight, coming out of the fourth round, I had them neck and neck, 2-2. And going into round five, I felt like Katie Taylor lost 5-6 miserably. Those could have even been 10-8 rounds, depending on, you know, how dramatic the judges were. But they were, you know, so 5-6. Round seven was a toss-up. But here's where it really went south for Amanda Serrano. Round 8, 9, and 10 were rounds that I saw very favorable for Katie Taylor. I saw the adjustment. You know, in 5 and 6, she really got racked. She really did. And you could see that Katie Taylor was looking for some, in those rounds, she was kind of going like, what is happening? Where am I right now? You could see it on the Jumbotron. And you could feel her, you know, having this like meeting of her mind. And then when she got to round 8, you could see the adjustment. There was a really dynamic adjustment that she made where she was eating off of the aggression of Amanda Serrano. And
absolutely.
I saw in that round 8, 9, and 10, I think it might have been like round 8, I saw the coach of Amanda Serrano kind of mime, like, go to the body. Like, you know, he kind of made a reference, like, you know, as he was exiting the ring, you know, go to the body, used his left hand, go to the body with the left. And I think if that was the instruction, I didn't watch it on television, I was there in the arena, but I think if that was the instruction, it was a mistake.
I agree. Paul, go ahead. I know you want to say something, but I agree.
I was just going to make a different point off of your various points from both of you about the learnedness of the referees. You had a couple, you know, at least the two top female fights that night, you know, the Cruz de Zern versus Cederus and the main event that we're talking about. Where you really got the sense that the referee understood the fighters I remember first hearing this in connection with Arturo Gatti, where, you know, an average referee that maybe doesn't know what he's all about, maybe more inclined to stop a Gatti fight sooner back in the day than somebody that's like, I think I know he'll come back and maybe make a fight of this. And you kind of got that impression at certain points during the women's fights that night, where it's like, these guys really understand who they're in with, because Katie Toe was really getting shellacked, it looked like, early. I was watching from third row ringside, and I was just like, wow, you know, I was like, where's all the, you know, where's all the fundamentals and everything? You know, until she got herself together, it was like, and there was times it really looked like she was getting hammered, and Cedarus was obviously getting hammered a lot of the fight, in the other one, and yeah, the referees just kept it going. There was no particular danger zone, but I feel like with other referees, there might be a point where one of them may have been stopped, and obviously Cedarus was en route to a loss, but Taylor was en route to a win. So it was good to see the discipline on display there that night of the referees, not just pulling the trigger as soon as they saw something, you know, acknowledging that these folks are champions, they're tough, you know, they're best of their weight range, and kind of letting it go rather than creating questions with, you know, questionable stoppages, which it certainly seemed like could have been in could have occurred at certain points in the main event for sure.
Hey, Paul, you are being noble. You are. I appreciate that. What you're saying is that's what, you know, you're supposed to say. But a referee like, I'm not stopping this. This is Madison Square Garden. I am not going to get myself in a controversial situation. If I see any kind of punches coming, I am not stopping it. I'm not stopping it. I won't get no work. I'm telling you. So I have to say that just to say that, Mark. I mean, Paul. Okay. But what you said was, you know, clear on point. I'm just telling you from a standpoint, because I sit and eat with judges and referees of that caliber all the time, and they tell me what they tell me, and I'm telling you what they tell me. So,
I guess for me, the question is, do you want a bad stoppage or do you want a body, you know, in the wrong situation? So,
but anyway, Paul, hey, man, I ain't trying to, I just want to throw that in there.
Right. Well,
I can definitely see that as well, for sure. But I'm saying you also don't want Katie Taylor leaving, you know, in poor condition if you don't feel like you're making the right call, letting her go too long. So I feel like it's got to be a difficult decision to make at times when you're seeing somebody getting hammered that you know is resilient and a world champion, but also looks like maybe, you know, that they're taking a lot of abuse in one or two rounds, you know.
Right.
Then you've got the thing where it's unwritten rule, she's a world champion. You've got to beat the champion, which we're taught there's no champions. You shouldn't know anybody. It's just two people competing. Whoever wins, wins. Who cares who has all the belts and who brought the crowd and all that? Right, you're supposed to not adhere to that. But you do. You don't mean to. You don't want to. You even make yourself not think that way. But when you're ringside and all that, you kind of get involved in it. You have to have a discipline to throw that out your mind. It took me a couple years, 3 or 4 years, to get that out of my mind. But now I can do it. But initially, you can't. And then the huge fight. I've done a huge fight, one or two huge fights, and you really, really got to bear down. But she didn't look like she was getting hurt, like Mark said, maybe a 10-8 round. But I wouldn't have stopped it. I wouldn't have stopped any of that.
Right. I mean, yeah, I might have gotten thrown off by the hysteria of the crowd and the excess amount of bleeding coming from both of them as the fight went on. But they're definitely jackhammering each other all throughout, especially in the later rounds.
You know? Dude, you can even hear your own thoughts. So how can you can hear? Like,
I was waiting for a quiet point in a round to even whisper to people next to me because there's no chance.
Imagine if you're judging.
So, Paul, what were some of the celebrities, some of the celebrity fighters and some of the celebrity in general that were at ringside? Because you were like in second or third row. I was not. Right. And so who was around there? What was going on?
You had a number of luminaries there. Let me try to think. You know, Rosie Perez, who's obviously a well-known boxing fan and actress, was first row ringside, two in front of me. You had Christy Martin there, right in front of me. I know Chris Cyborg was wandering around the arena with her belt and doing photo ops a lot of the night. Layla Ali was there. She was in and out of our section. I think she was walking the area too. I'm not sure who else, but you know, there was a couple of notable promoters and other, you know, kind of industry folks there that a lot of people just wouldn't necessarily know by face. But
Shields, of course. Shields.
Well, so Shields, I think she was in a different section. I didn't actually see her, but I heard she was there. And friends that were watching on the Zone were telling me about her comments after the cruise fight. So
everybody was there. Everybody was there. It was amazing. Everybody, you know, was there. I think I even saw my Amazon driver in there, man. Everybody was there. It was such an amazing event, and really, like,
it was
what it did. I just want to say this, Paul. That what it did for female boxing is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It elevated the female persona in the sport, but it did something else. It actually elevated the sport. It actually brought the sport of boxing to a completely different visibility and a completely different level. It created a different context for the sport, a context that I think has been lacking for generations. And I hope all of those naysayers out there that don't want to see women competing really, you know, there's a lot of people that don't want to see women fight. They just don't want to see it. And I get that. I really do. But I think this was a great learning experience for everybody in the sport, but really for people on the periphery of the sport to have a different – I've never seen the last time that you could see that many women in the arena was when, you know, guys like Sugar Ray Leonard, Hector Macho Camacho, you Oscar. Know, yeah. Oscar De La Hoya, Pretty Boy. I mean, you know, it's been lacking for years. And to know that the women can draw, not only draw, you know,
but bring women out,
but sell it out and make it a major international television spectacle is just, it's pretty profound.
Yes, I agree with you. As I said earlier, the female part of it was thrown out. It was just great boxing, great optics, great crowd for celebrities. You know, it wasn't neither male or female. It was just great boxing. And that in itself is great. I mean, what you got? You've got a Major League Baseball team has a manager as a lady, right? Then, you know, I don't want to get too political, but then you got the Roe versus Wade thing floating around here, you know. And then you've got the thing with the letting the girls continue to play sports and all this. Then you've got this huge spectacle that is, you know, based, you know, on this premise. So, Mark, you are absolutely right. The whole world is now going to have to pay attention to this type of thing, because this type of thing is going to spill over in the major media. Shakira Stevenson's thing is not necessarily just for boxing fans or whatever, but a female fight of this magnitude, you can see clips on everything worldwide. Of these two ladies doing what they did. One is from another continent, so you know they will be bathed in those clips. And then here, so it's going to be a lot. And then you got the talk show circuit, which they are more favorable to ladies doing something that a man usually does. So you're going to see them on The View and this and that. The legs on this thing are still growing, and the fight is over. So as you said, Mark, and then all of the undisputed stuff that happened. Now, the men has the undisputed thing, but you got a bunch of undisputed there. You got undisputed coming up. So undisputed is going to be the coin word. I mean, the catchphrase. Is it undisputed? Is it undisputed? And people are going to be forced to do that. The ladies did it. So why are we messing around with this? So It's going to be great.
I agree. I'm so excited to see what happens to those young ladies. I mean, I think, you know, Amanda Serrano, as to what's going to happen, what do you guys, if you were going to speculate, about what's next for Katie Taylor and what's next for Amanda Serrano. Where would you go with that?
You know, I want to talk, but go, Paul.
Well, this is where I need, John. He's got a very deep, women's boxing, knowledge, but, look, Serrano's already quite accomplished, you know, going into this fight. And the amount of different titles and adulations that were being announced by David Diamante, I hadn't studied her biography as close as some, and I was just like, wow, is he ever going to stop, like, listing them? And really the same thing with Katie Taylor. I don't think it affects either one of them unless one of them is, like, dramatically changed physically from the fight. But they're marketable. You know they bring it. You know, obviously Taylor is still relatively fresh as a, you know, a huge attraction. A lot of Irish coming over to see her that were in the crowd going absolutely bonkers.
Oh, unreal. Know. Listen, just to touch on that, on the exit of the arena, leaving the arena, Paul, it was insane. The Irish contingency marched onto 7th Avenue and 34th Street. Oh, I'm sorry, 32nd Street. They marched into the street, stopped traffic, and they were chanting. Do you remember the chant that they were chanting?
There's a few of them. Sweet Caroline. They had the U2 one going. They had a few, two or three others. You know, Free From Desire is always a big one for the British, also from Beefy Smith's crowd.
Incredible. So Katie Taylor, you know, exits the fight. She's 21-0 with 6 KOs. You know, she's got a 28.57 KO ratio, right? The young lad from Bright, Ireland, right, who's an amazing competitor, ekes out a win. The scores, I believe, were 96-93, 97-93, and 94-96. That was
Wasn't it a split, though? One of them went Serrano's way.
Yeah.
Yeah, Serrano won on one scorecard, yes.
Right.
Now, as far as Serrano's concerned, she's still the featherweight champion. She still got a strap. She still can move down. I mean, go back to where she came from. Now her marketability is off the hook, of course, because of this fight. She doesn't have to go back up there if she doesn't want to. She's going to be revered forever because she moved up. She can sit there at featherweight and command any type of dollar, any type of venue, anything she wants. She's got it. So it's not even going to be an issue with her. She's going to be a situation where it's positive for her. She can go ahead and clear out all the other girls. You know, I mean, once you get up there and you take them kind of punches from her, she's going to clear out all the other girls. So financially, she'll do well. As far as her legacy should continue. If, in fact, she goes and runs over to Ireland and fights this girl again, remains to be seen. I don't know if she would. I personally, at this point, I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that? I mean, for
probably be a demand.
Now the dollars.
Say, but whether she should is another question.
Right. The dollars would dictate that, of course. But if you throw out all of that, I wouldn't go over there and fight her. I'd make her come back over here again.
Well, I can.
If you want to fight that bad, come back and fight me again. I wouldn't go to her shores. I would not.
The question becomes, does the crowd, I mean, do they fill out like Wembley Stadium? You know, like, are they going to be able to pack Wembley Stadium for a rematch with 90,000 boxing fans and the American viewing audience? Does it end up being that big of a fight? Or like you said, do they do what they did the first time, which was make it here because, you know, Katie Taylor, I'm not sure has as big of a following as, or to make the fight in the, in New York was perfect with the Irish contingency and the, you know, the Puerto Rican contingency in New York. That was why they chose to make the fight there, right? The question becomes, have they built an audience, and is that going to be their bullseye target to take it back, you know, over over the pond, you know, to make something happen? Well,
I would think Katie Taylor, if she wasn't a legend, and you know, beforehand, will go back to Ireland with a huge rep from this fight, to the extent that I could see her filling soccer stadiums there. You know, I don't know what the biggest soccer stadium is in Ireland. It's just not a fact that I'm aware of, but I'm sure there's ones that are rather able to be filled that are larger in capacity than Madison Square Garden. I would expect it to be totally just off the chain if they did something for her there as a homecoming at this point, following this fight.
But who will be the opponent?
That's a fair question.
Does it have to be Serrano? Now,
can I get a lifeline?
Now, truth be told, she figured her out. Truth be told, all she's going to do is a continuation of those last five rounds when she fights Serrano again. She's already figured it out. She knows what she has to do the next time, and she'll win again. She gets it. She knows this bull's coming, and she knows what she has to do. She knows how to stand her and bunt her off. So the last five rounds that she won, she knows. So if they fight again, she'll beat Serrano again.
Harold, on the other hand, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I actually would love to see the fight again. I think when you get two fighters like this that know each other and they know what to expect, the coaches know what to expect. This is where it gets really interesting. The coaches have to adjust. The fighters have to adjust. They have to come up with other answers to the question. The puzzle can't be solved with the same pieces that they used this last time. I'd like to see the fight again. I think there's other fighters out there, other fights that could be made, but I don't see those fights being made before they get another chance to fight and Amanda Serrano gets another chance to get those belts back. I think she put on a compelling fight. It was a competitive fight, and it was a close fight. So I personally would like to see the two, you know, mix it up again, get busy again, and whether it happens over there or it happens here, honestly, I'd pay to see that fight. I'd pay to see it. It was that good.
And I agree with you, but Vernon Forrest couldn't beat who? Winky Wright couldn't beat who? Every time they fought, they lost.
Right.
To the same guy, same adjustments, all of that. It's just the style is there. Of course, when you want to see the fight, you know, it's going to be exciting, this, that, and the other. She won't win.
Right. Right. Well,
you know that. Well, but you'll see the fight. You'll see the fight. We'll go see the fight. It'll pack out 94,000, whatever, but she won't win.
You can't forget the fight, the rounds. 5 and 6, where Katie Taylor almost was stopped. She was almost stopped. And I think that they learned something in round 5 and 6.
Yes.
That there may be some answers embedded in there. There's some serious puzzle piece figuring out that's going on right now. And I personally, Amanda Serrano, I'd love to see you fight Katie Taylor again. Harold, you know,
I have to acquiesce to you because you are the trainer, world-class trainer. I have to just step aside because I'm on another side of it. So that's all I can say. I'm not even going to argue with you because you know what you're talking about.
Well, no, I love
I'll just say to that point. It's like seeing it. People saw the mythical, they thought they saw something when Shane Mosley got through Mayweather's guard, but nobody was able to replicate it. So that'll be the challenge going forward. Whatever it is that you extract from rounds 5 and 6, can it be replicated by anybody else or in the rematch? So,
well,
Nobody was able to do that to Mayweather again.
But round seven, she tried to implement the same process. She wasn't hurt or beat up. She was on a high. She's just rocked this girl 5 and 6 and 7. I'm ready. I'm going to take her on out. What happened? Something changed on Katie's side. She figured it out. Yep. And then she bullied her, even though she was aggressive, for the rest of the fight. That is going to continue when they fight round 13, 14, 15, 16. Yeah. Just on me.
I really get that. I can see that. That's an interesting hypothesis. I think I'm just saying what I'm suggesting is that these are not the average fighter's intellect. These two individuals are incredibly cerebral fighters. They did something that no other fighter on that card at MSG did. And that was, both of them, when questions were asked about their medal, both of those fighters had times in that fight where they had to dig deep and come up with answers that I haven't seen that many fighters do in a long time. And so all I'm saying is that I love the way they thought. I love the intellect they brought to the ring. I love the combat, the sheer action. It was a solid action fight from two females. And, you know, there's a lot of naysayers out there that say females can't produce an action fight like that. And look what we got.
Yes.
I don't want to see that fight not happen again. I'm just saying, I would go see it. I hope the listeners out there would consider going to see the fight. I do think that if these were regular fighters, you know, if this was like a Vargas, you know, Smith fight, I would say, yeah, it's just going to be the same thing, man. It's not going to be anything different. But with these two individuals, I think they both have the capability of producing something that's even more dramatic, a Turo Gotti, Mickey Ward-ish level, right? So I'm putting that out there. I'm saying it here. We did it on the boxing breakdown. Let's see what happens. Let's see what the future brings, Harold. And now I really don't want to get off this fight because I loved it so much. But we have to, right? So we have to go and talk about the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Bob Arum's Top Rank Promotions. Brad Goodman was the matchmaker, who always does a superb job in his matchmaking. It was on ESPN. It was on ESPN+. It was actually shown in Panama as well. It was a great card. Antonio Cobb, Jalen Phillips, Abdullah Mason versus Luciano Ramos, Nico Ali Walsh versus Alejandro Ibarra, Troy Isley, who is a very interesting up-and-coming fighter. Bing, bing, bing. Keep an eye on Troy Isley. Very interesting fighter. Fought Anthony Hanna, Keyshawn Davis, bing, 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 another one to keep an eye on. Fought Esteban Sanchez, Raymond Moratelia, fought Jeremy Hill, Andres Cortez, fought Alexander Del Bosquez, and then finally, Oscar Valdez squared up against Shakur Stevenson. So I want to jump right in and really get into the Oscar Valdez, Shakur Stevenson, Harold. What you got?
Initially, I figured it would be a walkover. It would be clearly seen who the superior fighter was. Right off the jump, and it happened. The very first round, the pattern was set. He was too slow. He knew he had to come in and try to bully him, And he actually tried to do that, and he had the metal and the fortitude to do that. It's just that the left-handed stance and the mental IQ and the reach and the understanding of the type of fight he had in front of him is shown through so clearly. Now, he was able to kind of mute that aggression from Shakur in a way by just fighting his fight. And he had his moments from time to time. But what I saw basically was, you know, the hand speed was not he couldn't handle the hand speed. Now, I just want to say this just quickly. We know Shakur has finally got his man strength. However, his bones have not hardened. He still is adolescent in his bone structure. Imagine in 3 years when he becomes a man, where the bones have actually settled and thickened and in density. His power is going to be really something to see because he's landing these clean punches just clearly, you know, and he still is not a man. Once he does that and continues on his way, he will always handle these type of fighters easily. Next time, it'll be a lot easier. He's going to be in a situation where this guy's going to be rocked a lot. He took a lot of good punches. He has a large, you know, cranium type of thing, so he was a big target. I like the way that Shakur moved. I like the way his opponent moved. It was a good scrap. He did exactly as he did. Now, I have to say, he did get hit more than he usually does, only because he's used to his power knocking his opponent out of the way. And he doesn't take any return fire. This night he did. He did take return fire, but he still dominated. And I think that the what he went through is really going to help him so much going forward that he's going to be dominant, just a dominant fighter. I mean, I don't really see anything else out there. He's in the gym with Crawford. They spar regularly. He can go to 147. You know, and when time comes, mentally he can stand there with Canelo. He can stand there with Spence. He can stand there with those guys mentally. His boxing understanding and process, whether his body, his weight, his chin can do that. That's a question to be seen. But as far as his actual understanding of the sport, it's there. It's obviously there, and he showed that. He didn't need a knockout, I thought. He just needed to be dominant in such a way that your eyes open. And that was more important to me than the knockout.
Wow. Great. What a great breakdown of that fight, Harold. Thank you. And Paul, what you got?
Well, I've only read the results so far. I'll plead guilty. And I think my ESPN DVR was cut off that I might not even have the entire fight. But just reading the result and then Harold and listening to Harold's breakdown of it, it's clear that the average and above average tough guy is not going to do anything to this man for a while. He needs somebody that could even dare match him in hand speed or overall boxing. And I'm just not sure who that might be. I mean, there's a number of fighters in that weight range that could probably make things more interesting round by round on their hand speed and skills. But there's no clear person that defeats him the way he's been looking. I mean, just throw out some names, Mark, for argument's sake. Who do you see in that whole weight range that world level that you think could be interesting? I'd be curious to see what you and Harold and myself would come up with as far as handicapping them.
Hey, Paul, he doesn't even want to go after the WBA or the IBF titles. He doesn't want to go after those boys. He doesn't want it. He doesn't want to be undisputed. Why? Those guys are so far below him. He's two levels above his current opponent. Two levels. Those other guys.
Which title holders are those right now? Just so
Ramirez is one, Mark. And who's the other one, Mark? Ramirez is the BA, and the IBF is some other guy, and they're not even on the radar. They're sitting there in their tears saying, I can't beat him. I'll go get paid to get beat up, but I can't beat him. He's not even looking to be undisputed at that weight class. He's not. He's looking to let me move up.
When you're thinking about people, at least in that range or neighborhood, I mean, what comes to mind as far as potential speed or boxing skill or poise. I mean, I'd say if he wants a good veteran challenge, you're talking about maybe Gary Russell Jr. If you're talking about another peer of his, maybe Devin Haney, if he comes out of Kambosos unscathed or otherwise. I mean, those are guys that are that speed and are fundamentally sound and aren't not just going to go in and try to brawl with them.
Well, so, I mean, you've got some guys there. Let's
who? Let's go through
the list of the top 10, okay, at that weight class, okay?
And let me rebut each one, please.
Well,
what do you say about Garrett, Russell and Haney so far, Harold? What do you think of those two for him?
Okay.
Wade is right.
Russell got the short arms. He'll lose on points. He'll get lined up and he'll get hit. He'll lose on points. Well, who's next?
But Russell
Haney has no power to keep him off of him. Once they match wits mentally and they start throwing back and forth, he'll win again because Haney can't knock him off of nothing. Haney will take the will be in there with him, but he won't be able to move him to make him be cautious. None of that. He has to be cautious of Shakur, period. And once one fighter is cautious in the other, you know who's going to win. Who's next?
Shakur.
Over to you, Mark, the top 10.
So first of all, for those of you listening in today, and you follow the podcast, everybody knows how Harold feels about Shakur Stevenson. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to level with you all. I was at Madison Square Garden, and I'm sitting there. I'm not going to tell you who I was sitting with, but somebody who's been on the program, hint, hint, recently, hint, hint. And I'm sitting there, and this gentleman says to me, I cannot believe Harold Hunt thinks that Oscar Valdez is going to lose to Shakur Stevenson. I don't know what he's thinking. Okay? And I said, well, okay, just to be objective, I go, so tell me, how do you think Oscar Valdez is going to win this fight? Oh, man. Listen, Shakur has not been tested. Shakur has not been tested. He hasn't been tested. And I'm going to tell you, Oscar Valdez is of a different breed. He's coming to the fight like blah, blah, blah. And it goes on and on. And I sat there eating my jelly beans because they, you know, In the sweets, they got jelly beans, bro. And I was so hyped up on sugar. I was like, freaking out on the sugar. And he's telling me this. And I'm just going, okay, so you really think Oscar Valdez is going to win this fight? And he goes, listen to me. You, if you're going to bet on this fight, bet Oscar Valdez. He's coming out on top. So I'm like, okay. All right. But I know, because Harold, I've listened to you on these podcasts. The last podcast we had, when we were talking about this matchup, you were so hype on Shakur Stevenson and his skill sets and what he can do and why he can do it. And, you know, the stab to the body and the hook off the jab and just the jab and controlling the distance. And we went through this whole thing about Shakur. They fight. It's, you know, a completely one-sided fight. And you're right. The question is, who in the weight class can actually match up with Shakur? So you got Oscar Valdez at number 2. Done. Okay. You got Jamal Herring. Done. You've got Shashkavadazavunrakhivmo. I don't even know how to say the guy's name. I've never seen him fight. He's number 3. I want to say his name. Shavkatazidovakhar. I don't know how to say the guy's name, but he's number 3. And then under that, you've got this guy from China, Kenichi Ogawa, and then you've got, I mean, I don't see anybody. You've got Jono Carroll, who's number 9. Chris Colbert is number 11. There's no fights. I don't see any big fights there. I mean, there's no one. There's no one. It's like, I wish I had my my cricket button. I don't have my cricket button tonight, you guys. But if I have my cricket button tonight, I really would hit it, but I don't have it. But you know what I have? What I do have is I've got, in honor of Shakur Stevenson, and is the rooster of that division. So
my daughter just texted me that she's going to sleep, and you just hit us with the morning rooster there. That was interesting. Interesting sequence for me.
Yeah. I mean, if you're listening to the podcast in Mexico, or you're checking in and you got your own, you got your chickens and your hens in your field, just blast this. Okay, here you go. Blast it. All their hair will go up, standing up on the ends. It'd be great, you know? Just play that back and forth for a little bit. But yeah, man, I don't see anybody at Shakur did an amazing job. Top Rank put on another great, great, great card. It was an amazing event. And, you know, Shakur comes up on top. And the question is, does that pose some problems for his marketability and his ability to get those bigger, bigger fights because he's so good? What happens next for Shakur Stevenson? Harold, go.
You got some people who may want to drop weight and come down and get that payday and get that whooping and get that payday. That's always a possibility. Okay. he may go up, you know, like Serrano did, you know, I still got my belts down there. I'll go up here and fight somebody. That could always happen. Like I said before, he could go clear out the division, Ramirez, the BA and the IBF. He could do that. I don't know if that's really marketable or whatever. You know, those guys weren't even there at the fight talking stuff and with the media. They was like, I'm staying home. They didn't even show themselves, those two other champions. So that's all I can really, you know, I can't see anything in particular. So I'm just, you're right, I'm at a loss. Where is he going to go? Some has to materialize. Someone has to come down or he has to go up just, you know, just to keep himself out there and that type of thing. So it's foreign to me. I don't know what's going to happen, Mark. I can't see it. Paul, what you got?
I can tell you there's guys like the aforementioned Gary Russell Jr. or Gervonta Davis could come back down. I'm sure would be more than willing to challenge him. Beyond, I mean, I think anybody that's looking to make their name, you know, needs to go through him, at least try to look valiant in losing. I don't think he's somebody that's going to be ducked for a while like Winky Wright, but to your point, so I don't see anybody that makes a really compelling matchup with him. You know, I tend to think Gary would be a good fight. I think Davis is the type of fighter where even if he's getting losing every round, you'd have to not make a mistake against him or he will get his chin checked for the first conclusive time in his career. You know, as far as that, you know, that fight that must happen for him, I'm just not sure who that is right now.
Well, yeah, I look at Gary Russell Jr. when he lost to Lomachenko. Okay, that was the first time he had to back up and fight someone who was mentally a better lined up with the boxing acumen. And he had nothing for Lomachenko. He had all his best stuff. He had nothing just because his mind was more together with the boxing, with the ABC that was coming across. He'll have that same thing with Shakur. He won't be able to, if you watch that fight with Lomachenko that Gary had, it was a whitewash. He had nothing. He had nothing because that's the first time someone's boxing acumen was above his. And it the same thing would happen with Shakur. He won't win. He won't.
What about Davis? If Davis comes in, can he make a mistake against somebody like Davis, even if Davis loses 11 rounds?
Which Davis we're talking about?
Tank.
Oh, Tank. Tank is a knockout artist. Once he gets you hurt, he'll take you out. We have yet to see Shakur in a situation where he has to take a powerful punch and rocks him. So the answers that we need to see this past weekend, we didn't see him. We didn't see anybody challenge him. We didn't see anybody hit him. We didn't see. So we don't know if he has a chance. We don't know. That's true. We don't know.
Ryan Garcia has some punch too. I guess that's another guy you could throw out in that weight range.
Yes. He does have a punch. But guess what? He can't take a punch.
Right.
Okay, so now you guys are touching on Harold's compelling question, which is, where does Shakur go? I believe that Shakur goes, this is just, you know, my humble opinion, I believe that Shakur has to go up. He's got to go up to get the money, to get the bigger fights. He's got to fight the Gervonta Davises, who, you know, at lightweight, Gervonta Davis is number one. Yeah, he's floating around up there at number one. Can't imagine why, right? You got George Kambosos, who's up there, Teofimo Lopez, Devin Haney, Vasily Lomachenko, Isaac Cruz, Jojo Diaz, Gustavo Limos, Ryan Garcia, Richard Comey. I mean, do I need to go on?
Well, you touched on an interesting one that I think everybody fell asleep recently on, Teofimo Lopez following his loss, but that is one hard dude to get past on most evenings.
You know,
that is not an easy out for anybody, no, even if you were to beat him. So,
but we are talking about where he is right now, though. He's talking about the weight that he's at right now, not moving up, staying where he is right now. There's nobody there in his.
I thought Mark just raised if he moves up.
He has to move up.
If he recovers.
We know he got to move up. I'm saying at his weight right now, if he stays there, what's there? Nothing, right? Right, Mark?
Nothing. There's nothing.
You have a couple of really tough fighters, but nobody that's really maybe would technically dominate.
And to be honest, he doesn't want to carry all those sanctioning fees, all those belt. Like, what? For what? For what? Right. You go up and you make the big money fights, get in the mix. Put yourself right in the heart of the discussion. You know, you've got your unified down there. Come on up. Grab your, you know, get your Gervonta Davis.
Yes, yes.
Fight your Kambosos. Fight your Teofimos. Yes. Devin Haney. Vasily Lomachenko. Isaac Cruz. Gustavo Limos. Joseph Diaz. You know. Nakatan. How do you say his name? Jeremiah. Nakathane.
Well, he already fought him.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But he moved up. He just moved up to try
he
to
look
see
good doing. He looked good moving up that guy.
Yeah. Ryan Garcia's number 10. All right. He's at the end of the pack. And then you got Richard Comey. I mean, listen, all I'm saying, you got Javier Fortuna, Mashioki Nakatani. There's so many fights to be made
for
that
him.
Weight class. You could just regurgitate. You could just mix and match the entire lightweight division for a year or two or three of just action fights. And it's the division. I think it's the best division in boxing right now.
I agree totally. He does have to move up. He does. I don't think he's ready physically yet.
Well, and you touched on that in the beginning of the program, how he may not be ready to do that. I think it's worth exploring that a little bit more, getting a little deeper in another episode of the Boxing Breakdown, really getting into that, because I think it's a great question. How does Shakur matriculate into adulthood? What does he do? How does he get where he wants to go? What is the plan? What is Top Rank? What plan does Top Rank have for him?
Well, who knows? I can tell you, Top Rank, in my opinion, and by the way, I should just note parenthetically, I'm going out of my comfort zone this evening. Usually I'm not fanboy. Usually I'm a claw-talking guy only. But Top Rank developed Oscar De La Hoya beautifully, developed Cotto beautifully, developed Mayweather beautifully. I have all the faith in the world that they'll develop Stevenson at the exact pace that'll be necessary to maximize his talents and gifts. I have not seen any promoter even come close to developing not just blue chips, because Top Rank has a lot of opportunities to develop blue chips, but blue chips that well and that progressively well, where you can see the progress with each fight and every next one seems to make sense about why it's happening. Unless the guy just starts going into mandatories, Every next fight seems like they're building on it after they see something. You check the boxes every time. So whatever they do with him is going to be very well calculated. And anybody he faces, they're not going to put him in a moment too soon. To your point about him and his body maturing and everything else. Top Rank is brilliant when it comes to that.
I agree with you. The Herring was the watershed moment. That Herring fight was a watershed moment because Herring would beat everybody in that division, everyone in that division, easily, besides him. So that was a great, you know, watershed moment for me.
Yeah, I always remember back in my boxing wonder years, which was around the early 90s, mid-90s, Oscar De La Hoya facing John Molina. And you know, there are people saying during that fight or immediately after, that's the fight that made a man out of De La Hoya. I think that's the Herring, to your point, I think he's the one that made a man out of him. I think Oscar Valdez certainly helped with that as well. And they're just, you know, it's now incumbent on Top Rank, which they've done for decades, to keep progressively building into more useful fights, and interesting challenges from here. And I think they can be fairly comfortable, but there's nobody that they should be protecting him from at the moment, but keep that pressure and incrementally, you know, rays of talent coming against him. And you'll see him blossom into something special here.
If they can keep him away from that for about a year, if they can keep him away from those fights for a year as he matures physically, then I think he could, you know, he can make waves in there. And some of those guys that Mark mentioned, he could possibly be, I mean, he could, it was a 50-50 fight, he could beat those guys. So he just has to mature.
One thing I should note, by the way, I mean, just going back again to my boxing wonder years, I made the point about Cotto and De La Hoya and Mayweather, what you don't want to see happen to him, and I don't think there's even anybody here that would do this to him in this weight range, is what happened to David Reed and Fernando Vargas against Felix Trinidad. You're like, these guys have been progressing well, but then there's Felix Trinidad level progression that almost nobody except Bernard Hopkins was ever ready for. You know, I don't feel like either of them were this. There's no career-changing fighter for Shakur that anyone could identify right now. You definitely don't want to come across somebody like that too soon. So,
not down there. When he moves up to lightweight, if his handlers, his trainer is, you know, his grandfather, if his grandfather thinks that he can compete up at the lightweight division, I'm sure they'll be the first ones to, you know, just pop right up there because, you know, I mean, it's definitely Shakur has the skill. I just don't know if he has the body, as Harold mentioned, and if he's really grown into that level of competition. I mean, like I say, you know, can you imagine a Vasily Lomachenko rocking with Shakur in the ring? Like, what does that look like? Can you see Devin Haney squaring up with Shakur? Can you see Teofimo barreling through, you know, aggressive, tactical fighting style, pyramid fighting style, so to speak? You know, can you see Teofimo? Can you see George Kambosos pressing the action against Shakur? Do you see Tank Davis rocking with Shakur, hitting him with uppercuts and catching him with powerful body shot, overhand shots? I mean, these are really, or Ryan Garcia, that would be a great fight to see. Shakur and Ryan could be a really interesting fight.
Right. Let me put you in a time machine for a second. You really got my gears turning here. Can you see Shakur, hypothetically, they're in the same era, after this fight, facing, say, Diego Corrales, Brian Juanmanuel Marquez, upcoming Manny Pacquiao, can you conceive of him winning one of those right now, coming off of what you've seen of him so far in this past weekend?
No, I don't see him beating Pacquiao. I mean, I think Pacquiao's in a class by himself.
Yeah.
I'm saying 130-pound Pacquiao, U.S. debut, or two or three removed from there.
Yes, I see him beating him at that stage, Mark. At that stage, like he said, he's 130. He's just coming up because he got an opportunity because he was a fill-in. He didn't have no hype, no nothing, and he happened to be around, and he got his chance, and he exploded on the scene. Back to Stevenson, just quickly, two things he doesn't have, we don't know. We don't know if he can take a punch. And we don't know if he has the kind of power to move those lightweight guys. Those are the two things that we have to see before he can go up there and mess with those guys. That's all I'm saying, Mark. We don't know.
Right.
We know. I mean, I got to go someplace else. We know Earl got a chin. Now we know. We didn't know.
No, hey, I'm not listening. After the last podcast, Harold, when you came on and you were talking about Shakur and all his skill sets, and, you know, there was some discussion about Oscar Valdez's ability to compete at a high level, and to watch what Shakur did to Valdez, I don't put anything past Shakur at this point. I think Shakur is, the sky's the limit for Shakur, but he does need to get up into that upper division. He does need to go up, because that's where his superstardom and the questions that you know, this gentleman I was talking about earlier on in the program has for Shakur, right? So, yeah, it was answered with Oscar Valdez, but listen, there's a lot of tough fighters up at the next weight class, and yep. I want to see those fights get made. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to continue to follow Shakur. We're going to continue to have the discussions around, you know, matchups that can be made at the lightweight division. And, you know, that's where we go next. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, we want to thank you for being with us tonight. We want to thank Paul and Harold for being on the program and just being so insightful and so willing to share your knowledge and your ability to communicate to the fans out there about boxing. It's been a pleasure. I want to thank you all for being with us. Don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button down below. Hit it, because we need more followers on this amazing program, and we are committed to getting it. We know it's going to happen. We know that you guys like what you're hearing. We get it. And so please share the broadcast, share the podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, and it's my favorite platform. They make it real easy. But, you know, here on YouTube, you can get to see us, you know. Look at, you know, the handsome Paul S. Haberman Esquire and Harold Hunt. And yeah, you got to look at my sleepy butt too. But anyway, that's another discussion. So thank you so much for being on the broadcast. Until next time, peace and love. And the Boxing Breakdown is out.
5 fans, join host Mark Roxie and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxie.